All right, Shavuot Tov, everybody. Yasher Koach, everybody, for coming. Thank you very, very much. Hopefully you'll enjoy and gain something. Our primary goal tonight is to prepare ourselves a little bit for the beginning of Slichos, which starts tonight, of course, for Ashkenazim at least, and for the Yom HaNoraim, specifically for Rosh Hashanah. Before we do that, so my little shiur tonight is going to be focused a little more on some of the details that have to do with Shemitah after Rosh Hashanah. I guess we could introduce it in the following way. When we talk about preparing ourselves for Yom HaDin and for Rosh Hashanah, and doing tshuva for things that we've done wrong or preparing ourselves, one of the things that we need to do is make sure that we know the proper halachos in order to be able to do the right thing or to do tshuva on something we did wrong. If we don't know what we're supposed to be doing, or at least what the issues are, there's no way that you can actually follow the halacha properly, and that, of course, automatically is going to lead to doing something wrong, which at the end you're going to have to end up doing tshuva for. So hopefully in this case nobody's going to do anything wrong, but at least you should be aware of some of the issues that come into play so that you can prepare yourselves accordingly for the different issues of Shemitah, going out of Shemitah. And hopefully at the end we'll have a few minutes to just discuss maybe one or two points about Rosh Hashanah as well. Okay, let's get started. So as we know, the Shemitah year is almost over. Shemitah is over the same day of the year that it started, on right before Rosh Hashanah. 1 year, basically Rosh Hashanah from last year to the end of the last day of Elul, including the last day of Elul of this year, right up till Rosh Hashanah. And the question is, if Shemitah is over, so are there any issues that relate to Shemitah that apply after Rosh Hashanah, when Shemitah is no longer in effect? And the answer, of course, is yes, of course. Otherwise, why would you be here, right? So the question is, what exactly are those issues to be aware of? What will they affect you or not? So let's take it in the following way. Basically, there are two main issues two main areas, I guess, of concern that come up after Rosh Hashanah, and each one can be subdivided into maybe two more. One is related to the consumer, meaning you going to the store and buying produce, fruits and vegetables specifically, and other stuff in the store after Shemitah. That's number one. That also will divide into two different categories, probably fruits and vegetables. And number two, which we'll deal with second, is your personal garden. Okay, meaning what are the issues in your personal garden, if you have one, that also will be important and affected by the halachos of Shemitah after Shemitah is already over. And that also is going to divide into two, and which we'll talk about a little bit later. Number one, in terms of fruit that's already growing right now, that's already there. And number two, things that you haven't yet planted that you want to plant going forward. Okay, that's how we're going to divide this up. So let's start with the consumer. Okay, you go to the store after Shemitah and you want to buy your lettuce, you want to buy your apples, you want to buy your cucumbers, fruits and vegetables. So what is the story? Meaning, is there a problem with Shemitah? Is there no issue with Shemitah? Do you have to figure out all the different questions about Heter Mechira versus Yibul Nachri versus Matzah Menutah versus Oli Mitzrayim, if you've figured out what that means yet by the end of Shemitah, any of that other stuff or not? So, anybody know the answer, or you want me to just tell you?
Does it depend on a few things, like when the fruit blossomed, which year, and when it was planted?
Okay, good. So, the answer is yes to all those. And the answer, as we said before, also, is that it depends a little bit on whether it's a fruit or a vegetable. So, let's start with the fruits. I don't know which one is more complicated. We'll start with the fruits, and then we'll go to the vegetables. All right. In terms of fruits, so if you've looked in the store, you know, different aspects, parts of the stores that you've gone to over the past couple of months, so you probably have noticed in terms of fruits that what's on the market right now, this time of year, Elul, end of the summer. Okay, no, I didn't actually mean in terms of which fruits. I meant in terms of the types of Shemitah status of the fruits. What have you seen in places that you've been? Okay, good. What else? What else have we seen? Probably seen a mixture of everything. Okay, depending on which store you go to and what you see there and which part of the store you shop in. So you probably will have seen by now many fruits that are Heter Mechira. Okay, for example, here in Yad Vashem in Machzen Ashuk, the main fruit section, the vegetable section is Heter Mechira, and which means most of the fruits, though not all, are Heter Mechira. There may still be a few that are from the sixth year, not very many anymore, but there may still be a couple left that are from the sixth year. You got to check the charts to see what's what. But most of them are going to be Heter Mechira. Some in, not in the main store in Machzen Ashuk, but in the side store in Osher Ad, and many other places are going to be Otzer Beis Din, which is what Chaim mentioned, which basically means they have Kedusha Shviyas. Those are all fruits that were from places that were not sold to non-Jews, and they were grown with Kedushas Shvius, with certain rules, and they were harvested under the auspices of whatever Beis Din that the store is working with. And those fruits, of course, have to have the status of Kedushas Shvius, which by now you probably know enough about to realize that they have to be treated carefully, especially in terms of the way that they're disposed, and the way that they're eaten, and the way that they're prepared, etc., etc. We're not going to go into the details of that now. Those have been covered in previous shiurim. If you need help figuring out where they are or how to find the halachos, let me know afterwards. That's Otzer Beis Din. You'll also find in many of the stores that have Yibul Nachri, okay? Fruits that were actually grown by non-Jews on non-Jewish fields. So that, again, you'll find here in Yad Vashem in the Shemitah store, the Machzen Eshek Shemitah store on the side. In Osherad, also they have some fruits which are Yibul Nachri. If you go to some of the other stores also that are under more Mahadran Hashkachas, including Rav Efrati, so you'll find a lot of this stuff is Yibul Nachri. So again, you have a range of different things. The question is, how does that go through after Shemitah? And the answer is, for fruits, because the fruits that are being sold now for the next couple months, most of them will have been fruits that grew during the Shemitah year. So the halacha is that most of these fruits will have the same status as they have right now. Okay, meaning any fruits that are from this past year, from the summer, the spring, grown now, will also still be Yibul Nachri, they'll still be Heter Mechira, they're still going to be Otzer Beis Din for the next couple months. Again, depending on which fruit it is, you have to look at the lists, which Yisinker can provide for you if he comes, or if not, you'll ask him later for them. I have a few at home as well. You can find them also on the internet, which fruits are till which time. But basically it continues, because the fruits are all fruits that were grown during the Shemitah year. So the same issues you have to deal with, whatever your Shemitah preference is, if you generally eat Heter Mechira, if you generally do not, whatever it is, you're going to have to deal with these issues in terms of fruits for the next couple months. Okay? That's basically the issue in terms of fruits. Any questions so far? I'm sorry, I didn't mention chul. You're right, correct. Yibul Chutz La'aretz also is one of the options, which again, depending on where you are and which fruit it is, you'll find for certain types of fruits. Chutz La'aretz basically means that was also grown by non-Jews, but not non-Jews that live in Israel. So again, we've discussed this in the previous shiurim. There are a little bit of less political issues when it comes to that, meaning you're not dealing with Arab produce, so you don't have those that prefer not to buy Arab produce. At the same time, there are those that say you should prefer Israeli produce, which is Heter Mechira, over non-Jewish produce, even if it comes from another country. So that issue will definitely still be relevant for the next couple months. And again, whatever you've been doing till now, whatever your preference is, you know, the same issues will apply. Yes? Not specifically, because some fruits stay around for much longer than others, okay? Some fruits only start becoming either Kedushas Shvius or from the Shemitah year around now, okay? I think some origins start very late, some dates I think start very, very late. You got to look at the list to see, but those things will be lasting, you know, for a year approximately until all the Shemitah issues are complete. Some of the other ones that start much earlier, a few months ago, they'll be done by Pesach time approximately. You got to know which one is which. Again, you have to look at the lists. You can look online. There's quite a few places that have these lists that say which one is which. Again, you can ask me afterwards for some. Yeah. Hold on. So that's the next one. We didn't get there yet. Okay, that's what I said before. We're dividing it into two categories. Fruits is number one, and now we're going to deal with vegetables if there's no other questions. Okay. When it comes to vegetables, so what's the story with vegetables? So you may remember from a while ago that the halachos of vegetables do not depend on the same issues as fruits. Okay, fruit is determined in terms of what year it's from. Is determined based on when it grows. Okay, the majority of the growth takes place during the Shemitah year. It's considered to be a Shemitah fruit. Again, the details behind what time that is, we're not going to get into now. That was discussed previously in terms of Chanata, whatever that means. There are different opinions. When it comes to vegetables, though, so the vegetable cutoff point is not based on when it grows, but rather when it's picked, which basically means for vegetables, what should be is that anything which grew, we said previously a year ago, anything which grew during the sixth year and was picked during the seventh year. So the halacha is that it's actually considered to be a Shemitah vegetable. Even if it did most of its growing before Rosh Hashanah last year, but it was picked on the third day of Tishrei after Rosh Hashanah last year, it's a Shemitah vegetable. And the same issues of Heter Mechira, Nachri, whatever it is, they all apply. So based on that rule, so one would think that once Rosh Hashanah is done, okay, any vegetables that are picked after Rosh Hashanah should be perfectly fine, no issues whatsoever, because we follow the picking. However, the answer is that that's not exactly the case. Okay, basically, the Rambam discusses that it seems, and this is, by the way, you should just know this is a big issue. Okay, there are a lot of different opinions about exactly how this works out. I'm going to give you one of the more accepted opinions, that this is generally what's followed. The Rambam says, and others say, that basically once the Shemitah year is over, we still have to be machmir when it comes to vegetables for a little while afterwards. Okay, why might that be? So the answer is, it's an additional chumrah that, according to the Rambam and others, that was imposed for various reasons. Again, there are a few different possible reasons why that could be. One possible reason is that, well, you're not really sure. Meaning, yes, it shows up in the store a week after Rosh Hashanah. How do you know whether it was picked after Rosh Hashanah or before Rosh Hashanah? It's hard to tell, okay? And if it's hard to tell, therefore we have to be machmir to make sure that you don't encounter any problems, that you think it was picked after Shemitah, in which case it's fine, but really it was picked before Shemitah and you didn't realize it. Okay, there are a few possible reasons why. That's one, I guess, one good reason which is given why we should be machmir. Again, the others we'll leave out for now. But that's the reason why after Rosh Hashanah we're still machmir. Question is, what point are we machmir till? So the true answer, according to most opinions, is the more complicated one. I'll tell it to you in brief, and then I'll tell you the easy answer, the easy way out of what time, you can pretty much be sure that nothing is a problem anymore. The true answer is basically, this is the way that's presented by the Rambam, according to many Achronim, is that at the point when whatever vegetable you're talking about, basically, however long it would take for that vegetable to grow up to its full size and then be picked after Rosh Hashanah, once you get to that point, so then any vegetables that exist from before, that were grown before Rosh Hashanah would be permissible. Okay, meaning basically, let's say like this. Okay, some vegetables grow very, very fast. Okay, for example, cucumbers and zucchinis grow really quickly. Okay, and how long they grow for, I don't know exactly, but they're pretty fast. Okay, and basically, if you plant a cucumber or zucchini in the ground the day after Rosh Hashanah, okay, how long will it take before that cucumber or zucchini is full size that you could pick it and sell it in the store and it would look exactly the same as the cucumber that was grown before Shemitah was over and picked right after Shemitah, but it was already fully grown before Shemitah. I mean, before Shemitah was finished. What point would that be? The answer is, it's pretty soon afterwards. Again, I don't know if it's a week or 2 weeks or whatever. Pretty soon afterwards.
Can I clarify, Freddie?
Yeah.
Talking about a cucumber from flower point, a cucumber from seed. If I plant a cucumber in the ground and wait till the whole plant grows up and starts producing cucumbers, is that what you're talking about? If you have a cucumber plant existing already and it flowers and how?
Yeah, probably the second one.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, probably the second one. So in that situation, it's relatively quick. So based on that, the halacha should be, and essentially, that for every single vegetable that you talk about, there will be some time over the next couple months that at that time that vegetable will be not considered to be Shemitah anymore, depending on how long it takes to grow. Okay.
Even if it...
Correct. Meaning anything at that point, anything is going to be permissible. Now, the point behind that logic is that once you get to, let's say, 2 weeks or 3 weeks afterwards, most of the stuff that's going to be sold in the stores are going to be vegetables that were grown after Shemitah. Okay, even if there are still some that were from beforehand, as long as they're picked after Shemitah, again, if they're picked before Shemitah, it's still a problem. It's still a question. But as long as they're picked after Shemitah, even if they're picked a week after Shemitah or 2 days after Shemitah, once you get to the point that you could have planted it after Shemitah and it would look the same, okay, so at that point, then everything is permissible, including the ones that are picked after Shemitah, even if they grew before Shemitah was over. The problem is that's hard for everybody to know. There are charts, again, I haven't seen them yet myself, but I believe that there are things out there that will tell you at what approximate date each vegetable can be determined that you can say that it's not an issue of Shemitah anymore afterwards. Again, I haven't seen them. I think they're out there, but I can't tell you right now where they are. I do not happen to see them right now. I'll have to take a look if I can find them at some point somewhere on the internet or somewhere else. I will post it on the groups. You can. I'll post it there. The easy way out is to basically say, and this is what many people do, is to say that once Hanukkah comes, okay, the Rambam talks about Hanukkah specifically, because Hanukkah time, the first day of Hanukkah, according to the Achronim understanding of the Rambam, is basically the time that you can assume that almost all, though not all, but almost all vegetables by that point have, even if they were planted after Shemitah, they've already grown to the point that they would be picked and sold in the store and look almost the same as the vegetables that were basically grown before Shemitah. Okay, there may be a couple exceptions, maybe onions, a couple ones that grow very, very slowly. But most vegetables by Hanukkah time, you can assume that most probably they were picked after Shemitah. And even if they weren't, they look the same. And therefore, in that case, there was no gzeirah. So if you want to be sure about everything, again, it depends on what your shita is. If you hold, of Heter Mechira, for example, and you go to the store, then you have no problem because they're going to be selling the same Heter Mechira for the next 3 months. There's no issue. But if you, let's say, like this, either if you try to avoid Heter Mechira, and you want to know when can I go back to shop in Machzene Ashuk, well, let's say the other. Let's say that you like Heter Mechira and you don't like Yibul Nachar. You don't like Arab-grown produce because you don't want to support the Arabs. Okay? You want to know, when can I go back and shop in the stores that have Arab produce during Shemitah. Same issue. So again, if you want to wait till after Hanukkah, so after Hanukkah, according to most poskim, there is absolutely no problem after Hanukkah whatsoever. You can assume in most cases that that's not a problem. Maybe some cases might be a little different, but you know, in general, it can be assumed that after Hanukkah, that everything is fine. You don't have to have any question anymore what I'm getting for my vegetables. There are some shittas that are more lenient than that. Okay, there are definitely some shittas that are a little more lenient. But again, this seems to be the general practice, either to figure out exactly for each vegetable at what point it's permissible based on how fast it grows, or to take the easy way out and just say, I'm going to wait till Hanukkah, and after Hanukkah, whatever issue, whatever I did beforehand, I can say that it's not a problem anymore and I can buy normally. Questions on point? No questions?
How do you suppose actually differentiate between vegetables that are heter matura from Shemitah year and vegetables that are grown
post? Usually what's done is that they get their vegetables by a certain date, they switch over. Okay. Every vegetable is different. That's why it makes it tricky. But if you looked at if anybody saw the chart or the dates for Shemitah over the past year, when does it start to become a question of Sfichin? When does it start having Kiddushat Shviit? Okay, Rabbi Mohan had a chart. There was a chart from Rav Efrati's Institute. There are a few other charts that I've seen around. There's some on the internet from Machon Tarva Aretz. Okay, if anybody's seen any of the charts that I'm talking about, so it's the same idea. Okay, meaning that what that is basically is an approximate date that in most stores, but that's when they start to, not important, they start to sell and start to get from the supplier vegetables that were, Shemitah vegetables or non-Shemitah vegetables, whatever it is. Okay? But it's generally within a couple days that they switch over, that's the time that they start having vegetables from the next year. So if you went and, ask the store, again, I don't know if they'll tell you everything exactly, but the Mashgiach would know. If there is a Mashgiach that comes, I haven't seen him, but you can call the Rabbanut, whoever is, certifying the store, you can ask them and they'll be able to tell you, exactly if they want to talk to you. Okay, but that's the idea. Okay, meaning every store has it around the same time as the other stores, unless you have a special store. But most regular stores have a special, a certain date, and then after that date, that's when they start to, sell from the next year. Okay. All right. Any other questions on the vegetable issue? No. Again, this is there are a lot of opinions about this point about exactly the dates, and there are some that say a little differently in terms of when you can start. Some are more lenient that say even things that were grown during Shemitah and picked during Shemitah are already permissible after Shemitah's over. But that's not how we generally hold. Most people are generally a little more machmir than that. But again, be aware, there are some different opinions out there. So if you hear something a little different than what I said, be aware that's not, doesn't mean that it's wrong. Okay, it just means it's a bit of a different opinion. And I chose to give you what I felt was the most accepted, widespread accepted opinion. Okay, let's go to the garden. Okay, let's start with the garden. So the garden also has one or two different issues to deal with. Issue number one is, what about the fruit that we said? What about the fruit that is growing in your garden from this past year, which is basically Shemitah fruit? And the answer is, it still has Kedushat Shviit. Even if you wait till 2 months from now to pick it, if it's still oranges or apples or lemons or whatever it is that grew during the Shemitah year, it still has Kedushat Shviit. What does that mean practically? It means all the same halacha that you've been keeping until now in terms of first thing, again, which is a little more not as relevant, but how you harvest, how you pick it. Okay, there are certain rules about how to pick Kedushat Shviat things, which generally basically is not so practical in a garden. It basically means you can't harvest it in a way which you harvest like a mass amount, like a supplier, somebody who's going to sell them. You can't do it in a way which shows that you're the owner. All you could do is, pick a couple, pick however many you want for a couple days, only for your family, and not, a humongous amount of 200 at once. Which again, most people do that anyway. In terms of how you pick it, do you use special machinery? Again, most of us don't do that. So it's not really an issue for us. It's more an issue for the people that are actually, selling them, the real farmers. But again, whatever rules apply for Kedushat Shviat in general apply here as well.
So it's also hefker for other people to...
Correct. So the same issues about being mafker your garden, that it's hefker, anybody can come in and take whatever, the same issues still apply to Shemitah produce, even after Shemitah. In addition to that, so again, the rules we said before about how to keep it, how to dispose of it properly, how to prepare it, all the same rules still apply to that produce as long as that produce is still in the field, in the garden. Okay. One other point, which we're not going to talk about in detail now, we might have another shiur about this at some other point, and at that time, hopefully I'll record it also, so you can't come, you can listen afterwards, is the issue of biur. Okay, bet, yud, ayin, vav, resh. Biur basically is a halacha where anything at certain dates, which Chazal established, fruit that you still have that is not available anymore out in the fields, if the animal can't find it in the fields because it's basically usually picked, then you have to get rid of it from your house as well. Okay, what are those dates? So again, Chazal made certain dates and other things. We have set dates that we deal with. The first date is probably not until about also around Hanukkah time or so, not for another 2 months or so. But after that, every fruit or vegetable is going to have, I guess fruits really, every fruit is going to have a certain date where at that date, you have to be mafkir, you have to basically declare ownerless any fruit that you might have that's kedushat shvi'it specifically, not heter mechir, but kedushat shvi'it specifically according to most, that's in your house. You have to say, this is hefker, put it outside in front of a few people and leave it there, and then maybe you can come back an hour later or even 10 minutes later and come pick it up and bring it back inside again. That's the short version. Okay, and the longer version of explaining why this is and the details behind it, I think maybe we'll have another shiur about it at some point. Again, we'll record it and post the information on the internet, God willing. You can look around also other some of the Sfarim. Rav Rimon has a nice piece on this in his book. All the books have a little piece on beer. But that's another halacha which is relevant after Shemitah, mainly for different fruits, just to be aware of when you see it come up in a couple months. Okay. In addition to that, the other main issue when it comes to the garden is the following. Okay, let's say you want to plant. Now the Shemitah is over, you want to go and plant something in your garden. Can you plant? So the halakha, the normal answer is, after Shemitah is over, are there any restrictions? No, it's mutter, it's fine, right? You're allowed to plant after Shemitah. The problem is, what exactly are you planting and where did you get it from? So the way that most of us plant today, again, let's talk mainly about, we'll talk about trees right now. Okay, just keep it for trees. Most people plant trees, you don't just plant your own tree from scratch, you buy a tree from a nursery. Okay, that's what most people do. Again, I can't say everybody, I can't speak for everybody, but I think that's the more common practice. So if you're going to do that, the question is, where did those trees come from, and what were those trees doing during Shemitah? Ever thought about that? If you didn't, you're in good company, because I also didn't think about it until recently. So that's a real problem. Okay, most nurseries that are dealing with these types of things were probably either growing the tree, they planted it, or they grew it, and they did a lot of things during Shemitah, which are probably forbidden if they're done straight without any other type of certification. The question is, can you then buy those trees and plant them again in your garden afterwards? And the answer is, you know the answer? The answer is no. Okay, it's pretty clear from the Mishnah. There's a Mishnah, Maseches Trumos, that talks about this, and it's quoted in the Rambam, the Halacha. Now, it's pretty clear that anybody who plants trees during Shemitah, both if it's done intentionally, or even if it's done b'shogeg, even if, let's say, you didn't realize it was usher, for whatever reason, the Halacha is that you are obligated to uproot it afterwards. The word in the Mishnah is ya'akor, ayin kuf resh. You have to uproot it, which basically means you can't use it. So based on that, what's generally accepted is that trees that don't have supervision, that may have either been planted or serious malachas done to them during Shemitah in a prohibited way. So in general, you have to assume those trees are prohibited. You cannot buy those trees. The question is, what's
that? It can last for a while.
Correct. So I can't tell you exactly how long it lasts for, but it can last for long, like at least half a year to a whole year, probably even close to a whole year. What do you do? So that this is exactly the question. Yeah,
more than a year.
It could be, but already once it's all a full year later, it could be by that point already. You know, it's not definite that it was a Shemitah tree that they did something wrong to. It's already more of a question. In that case, maybe it's you can be more makil. But at the very least, till a year. Let's talk again another year if you have this question after another year. Okay, but let's talk now. Just let's talk about this year, the coming year. What do you do? Okay, what are you supposed to do if you want to do this? So I actually asked this question to Rav Kadosh, if you know who he is, here in Yad Yamin. He's one of the people that knows a lot about these kind of things. Before I asked him that question, I already saw a little piece in Besheva last week where one of the rabbanim from Machon Torah V'Aretz also asked this question. I already knew the answer, but I wanted to see exactly what they were going to say about it. Basically, they said what we already guessed, which is basically that you can't just go buy you know little shtilim or whatever, wherever you want. You have to do it from a place that has supervision. The problem that I was asked was, well, where do you find supervision? So the answer is that there are not so many places in this area of the country, apparently, that do have supervision on these kinds of things. However, Baruch Hashem, Rav Kadosh told me that apparently in Gan Etzal there's actually more than, at least one, maybe even more, at least two maybe, places, nurseries in Gan Etzal that actually have supervision. Exactly. So that's it's your last name, right? You're right. So he's the one that actually mentioned by name was his. But he said there's at least one or two more also in Gan Etzal that do have certification. Essentially, what that means, what does it mean they have certification? So it means that those trees were under the supervision of Rabbanim, that they got a Heter Mechira. Okay, it means that they did have the Heter Mechira, which means that nursery was sold to a non-Jew. And at that time, basically afterwards, they followed the regular rules of what you could do with Heter Mechira, which again, according to many posts, it means that you can't have Jews doing Malachas D'Oraisa, but you can have Jews doing Malachas D'Rabbanan. You can have non-Jews doing Malachas D'Oraisa, whatever the rules are, which I'm not going to get into now. And that's the rules that they followed for relying on the Heter Mechira. So Rav Kadosh was telling me, you know, basically somebody relies on the Heter Mechira, you know, you can buy from there, and if you don't, maybe not. I said, well, you know, what if you are Machmir, sort of, but not exactly, you know, so he said, you know, he agreed with me that there's room to make a. What does that mean? Basically means like this, okay, there are many people that don't like the Heter Mechira. I mean, that feel that the Heter Mechira is not an ideal solution to the problems, but, you know, we understand why it has to be done for all the different reasons that it has to be done today in the modern state of Israel. So if you feel that the Heter Mechira is not ideal, and even if you're machmir enough, like many people are, not to eat the Heter Mechira, again, that's fine. We see here that we have Heter Mechira, and there are many people that say it's better to eat the Heter Mechira, okay? There are many big rabbis that say it's better to eat the Heter Mechira than the non-Jewish produce, okay? Rav Malamed and Besheva writes about this every week that I've seen. Rav Rimon also feels that it's better to eat Heter Mechira than non-Jewish produce. Now, I'm just saying, just as an illustration here, somebody who is machmir not to eat Heter Mechira, but when push comes to shove, if you ask them, well, is it really completely worthless? So most Rabbanim will say it's not completely worthless. They'll say that it's really valid, but, you know, you can help it, it's better not to rely on it. So for somebody like that, you know, which, again, there are a lot of people like that, so somebody like that, I would say, even if you're machmir to avoid Heter Mechira food, if you can, so it's still, for this type of issue, where you're not talking about eating, there's definitely, you know, more room to be lenient, and, you know, you can go and buy the plants because of the fact that even if you would say that it's what they did, they shouldn't rely on Heter Mechira, but there are plenty of rabbanim that say that what they did is okay, and therefore what they did is okay, according to their opinions, you don't have to say that you have to uproot their tree. Okay, I mean, you can say they followed their opinions, and you take the tree now, and it's fine. It has what to rely on, and now you're doing nothing wrong. Now you're just planting it after Shemitah. That's fine. Okay, so that's basically the advice that's given to try to get from a nursery that has pikuach. Other than that, you'll have issues. Yeah?
Does a cactus have the din of a tree?
A cactus. I hadn't thought about that one. I don't think so. Cactus, how does a cactus grow? Wrong on how cactus grows. It depends on which way.
I don't know. I have
cactus
one
is a plant,
that
right?
I eat that lowers my blood sugar.
Okay, a cactus, I'm sorry, I don't know this, I apologize, and I'm ignoramus when it comes to this. Okay, a cactus grows as a plant, or is like a tree, like once a year it has fruits, and it always grows. And
it doesn't have any fruit. Just a cactus. Okay. Not sovereigns.
Regular
cactus. Actual cactus, no fruit.
Okay, so the question is what do you eat from the cactus? Do you squeeze it out? How do they get the juice?
No, I eat the cactus.
Actually, the cactus.
I take the thorns off, I eat the cactus.
But it's edible, right?
But people also have cactuses for yofi and things like that.
Right. But it's edible, right? The
one I'm talking about is not everyone.
Right. Okay. So I have to admit a little bit of not being sure. What again, just tell me how does a cactus grow? Meaning, is a cactus something which, you know, it basically stays in the ground every year, doesn't, you know, it stays there, right?
You know what it looks like with the sabras on it?
I think so, yeah.
Take the sabras off, that's
right.
That's it.
Okay, fine. So basically,
it doesn't grow fresh each year?
It doesn't grow fresh each year, right? It's not like a vegetable which gets uprooted and replanted, right? It's like a tree. It grows like a tree, right? So it's like a tree then. Okay, so it has the same status as a tree. None of the issues of vegetables, of svichen, and stuff like that.
I mean, if you rip off the, I don't know if it's a leaf or whatever you call it, like, a different one's going to grow back. I don't know if that makes it like a banana
Bananas also do not have the status of vegetables for the same reason. They grow as trees, and it's something which constantly grows. It's not something that every year you have to replant again. Okay? So that's why cactus, according, again, I apologize that I'm not up on, I should know these things, but I haven't dealt with cactuses so much recently, so I guess I'm not really Israeli. What can I tell you? So it's the same thing, it should be the same thing as bananas then, and that it's treated as a tree and not as a vegetable. Okay, and when it comes to Shemitah, at least. Maybe not for other things, but certainly in terms of Shemitah, it's treated as a tree. Okay.
Are there any nurseries that would go beyond the letter of the law, or whatever, hydroponics, or growing them in little things off the ground? I mean, you talk about all this before.
Right, good question. So there are places that you can get, I think, Matzah Menutak. But to be honest, I don't know enough to know where they are. If you speak to Rav Kadosh, maybe he can put you in the right direction. If you need help speaking to him, I'll be happy to help you. I told him that I would tell people that they can talk to him if they want more information, because again, I have to admit, I'm not so up on the details of exactly where to go and who to speak to or whatever about actually finding the right place. But, you know, it's a good possibility, meaning those that grew in a matzah menutak, detached plants, not on the ground with the proper halachic conditions, which there are quite a few of, but assuming that it was done like that, then there's definitely less of a problem. But I don't know where. I have to ask him. And he might have to do some work also. He didn't mention anything to me off the top of his head. Okay, great. Any other questions about this before we finish up with a little bit of a couple minutes on Rosh Hashanah? Or Don, are you in a rush, or do you want to finish right now, or have to have 5 more minutes? You sure? Okay. All right. Just a quick thought about one thought and a quarter about Rosh Hashanah. Sure.
weeding or grass, and then you change with that?
Everything after Shemitah is permissible. You can do whatever you want, yeah. Yeah. Everything in terms of garden, everything else is perfectly permissible, yeah. Completely. Okay. So buying flowers is still a bit of a question. It's a bit of an issue. It's a good point. It depends which kinds of flowers. And this is not always easy to know. You have to really know your flowers well, which again, I have to admit, I don't know my flowers very well. Flowers that are annual, yearly flowers that when you buy them, again, this takes a little while before they grow, and I don't think you'll see them at the beginning of the year. But flowers that are grown every year, you know, if you know that they grew next year after Rosh Hashanah, then those flowers will be fine. Flowers that are, you know, biannual, meaning flowers that grew over the span of 2 years or more, so that might be a question, because those flowers probably will have had growth and maybe even been planted during Shemitah. So if you're dealing with those flowers, at least for the coming year or so, it's preferable to buy those flowers that are that have a certification, which again, for this issue, for flowers, Heter Mechira, according to most, is fine. So any flower, any place that has flowers that are sold with a Heter Mechira is generally considered to be fine. So that's what you should try to keep buying those flowers if you can over the next year. Again, I can't tell which one is which. If somebody who knows flowers well can tell which one is which. In Machzen Eshek, from what I understand, the flowers they sell there are fine. I mean, those have a Heter Mechira. And you can assume that they're fine. So that's... So when it comes to flowers, probably also... That's correct. Meaning, the issues of Svichen, when it comes to flowers, should be fine after Hanukkah because of the same reason. Meaning, by Hanukkah, they assume that that everything is fine. There may be some that will be more machmir in that case, because flowers, I think, take a little longer to grow. So there are definitely some that would say that even after that, if you know for sure they're from last year, then it might still be a problem. But you know, there may be some more room to make it after Hanukkah. Let me look into a little more. If I find any information about the specifics behind it, I'll let you know. That's a good point. I didn't happen to see so much information about it now. That's what I would think. What I told you, that you know, there's room to make it afterwards, but some will be more machmir. But I'll look more, and I'll find out more information if I can. Okay, Yasher Koach. All right, 3 minutes about Rosh Hashanah. There's a very, very interesting machlokas about davening Rosh Hashanah, which is, are you supposed to cry during davening Rosh Hashanah? And the answer is, believe it or not, it's a machlokas. Right? Who's the machlokas between? So the Be'er Heitiv, one of the commentators in the Shulchan Aruch, so he quotes from the Arizal. And the Arizal says, in Siman Tov Kuf Pei Dalad, he quotes it. He says, the Arizal nahag livkos b'Rosh Hashanah v'Yom HaKippur. The Arizal used to cry in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. V'yomar, ki mi she'enu bocha b'yomim elu, einish masa tova shleima. Hey, anybody who does not cry on these days, his neshama is not good and complete. I mean, basically, according to the Arizal, you're not really a good Jew if you're not crying Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur davening. Okay. What does it mean? It means that the davening is not here. It may be here, it might be in your mouth, it might be here, but it's not here yet. Okay, you need your davening to get here, inside you. Okay, and your heart and your stomach, you need to feel it. And if you're not crying, it means you're not feeling the davening properly. That's what the Arizal says. Now, in the commentary here, so the number of the Achronim explain as well, that what that means is that you have hardness of your heart. I mean, your heart is not soft enough yet. You haven't been able to get in there and basically, you know, feel what you're saying. Okay? And then they quote here also that somebody who is... who has this problem and can't cry, he should at least make the sounds of crying, meaning he should make believe he's crying during davening as much as he can. And maybe that will, you know, get you to the point you'll either start crying or HaKadosh Baruch Hu will consider it as if you cried, etc., etc. Very interesting. But guess who disagrees? If anybody had to take a guess, who might it be? What'd you say? Good guess. That's not the one that's quoted, but you're on the right track. Somebody similar to the Rambam, a little later in history than the Rambam, but that kind of person that you would guess. Oh yeah, that makes sense. That he's the one that says that you shouldn't do that. Anybody? The answer is the Vilna Gaon, the Gra, is quoted in the Maaseh Rav, which is one of the Sfarim they collect his practices, and they say here in his name, Ve'ein Livkos B'Rosh Hashanah, you should not cry in Rosh Hashanah, including during davening. Why is that? Because there's a very famous pasuk in Nehemiah which says, "Do not mourn, al tisa balev, al tifku, don't mourn, don't cry in Rosh Hashanah. L'chu yichlu mishmanim, go basically eat your food, be happy, rejoice. Ki chedvas Hashem hi ma'uzchem, because Hashem is rejoicing with you. This is a time to be close to Hashem and to be happy." Okay, famous pasuk on Rosh Hashanah. That's the reason why we have a Rosh Hashanah suda. That's what the Gra says, and that's what it's talking about. There is, they say, it's talking about Rosh Hashanah. This is a very interesting machlokas. Okay, well, which one is it? Are we supposed to be happy during davening? Or are we supposed to cry? It's pretty extreme, right? So, they say, they quote in the name of the Bnei Yisachar and a number of other Sfarim, including, by the way, Rav Chaim of Volozhin, at least the students of Rav Chaim of Volozhin, they want to say that really there's no machlokas. Okay, really they don't argue. How do they not argue? They say like this. Say that when the Vilna Gaon was saying don't cry on Rosh Hashanah, okay, he didn't mean don't cry at all. He meant don't cry in a manner of mourning and a manner of sadness. Okay? That's what he meant. Are you allowed to cry during davening? If you cry in expression of davening, of supplication and emotion, and getting close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even the Gro would admit that's perfectly fine. And maybe when the Arizal said you should cry, he didn't mean you should cry all day. You should be bawling like for no reason. You should be bawling because you're sad or you're mourning. He meant also you should be bawling because you're crying out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Please Hashem, give me a good year. So this already gives us a certain perspective on Rosh Hashanah. What is Rosh Hashanah all about? Again, there's a lot more you can go with this, but not for now, obviously. What is Rosh Hashanah all about? Is Rosh Hashanah a day of happiness or a day of being scared, a day of crying? Which one is it? And the answer is it's both. And the answer is that it's both. There's a mitzvah in Rosh Hashanah of simcha, according to many opinions. Simcha. There's a mitzvah, we agree, again, there's a machlokas in the Rishon, whether you can fast in Rosh Hashanah. But we posit you can't fast in Rosh Hashanah. You have to eat, have a nice suda. You should enjoy yourself. Yeah, that's one side of Rosh Hashanah. Absolutely, don't sit there all Rosh Hashanah meal and, you know, I can't say a word, I can't talk, I can't have a good time, I can't eat. You know, no. You're supposed to be confident that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give you a good year. And at the same time, when it comes to davening, you are supposed to have that feeling of emotion, that feeling of supplication, of crying out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the feeling of davening, and please Hashem, please help me, and I want to get close to you. And that involves crying, okay? Crying means is an expression of emotion, okay? Crying is the most... You know, the most, I guess, the expression that you can see the most that somebody is being emotional when they cry. Okay, that means it's really in there. So that's also true in Rosh Hashanah. We have to have that as well. And how do we get both? The answer is it's not so clear. It's a really big challenge. How to balance yourself so that you really have both sides. But that's part of our vote on Rosh Hashanah. It says, the Givul Bir Ada in Tehillim, you should rejoice with trembling at the same time. And the challenge is how do we do that? And the answer is we have to try. It's not, you know, one formula. But even during davening, we have different elements of that, of rejoicing during davening and being, you know, crying to Hashem during davening. And, you know, if you can get both in at different times, don't feel something's wrong with me, I'm, you know, schizophrenic. No, that's exactly what Avodas Hashem is all about. Okay? Avodas Hashem the whole year is this balance between feeling confident, feeling happy, feeling excited for my Avodas Hashem. And the other side, well, I have a little bit of yira, a little bit of awe, a little bit of fear. Well, maybe God is watching me. I have to be careful what I'm doing. Which, again, if you have too much of that, it's going to drive you crazy. But if you have a balance of both, you know, then... Bezer Hashem, you're well on your way towards achieving a certain perspective on Avodas Hashem and achieving, you know, where you want to go. And again, not an easy thing to do, but that's the challenge that we have, that each one of us should try to be able to get a little bit of an element of both, of being able to get ourselves both to the point of crying out to Hashem, of davening to Hashem with emotion, with tears, and at the same time rejoicing and feeling close to Hashem, being happy that we're with Hashem, and we're able to be confident that he's going to give us a nice, a good new year. And with that, we should read a Ksiva Chasim HaTova, and the rest of the bracha is that the same way that for Shemitah, Shemitah requires a lot of preparation before Shemitah, the year before, and as we see now, Shemitah also spreads itself out and spills over into the next year for quite a few months to come. Shemitah is sort of overarching like that it's not just 1 year, it becomes really almost 3 years that you have to deal with the issues of Shemitah. So too, Rosh Hashanah also should be something that we prepare for before Rosh Hashanah. And at the same time, for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, the effects of Rosh Hashanah and the influence on us should spill over into the next year for a long time, that we should have the same feeling of closeness to Hashem and davening, supplication, and happiness, and excitement for many months to come afterwards.